Welcome back, everyone, to another thrilling episode of AI Unchained. I'm Jack, your tech enthusiast and slightly biased debate champion.
And I'm Cor, the voice of reason and balance, here to keep Jack in check and provide some actual insights. Glad to have you all tuning in today.
Oh, don't be so modest, Cor. You bring plenty of fire to the conversation, too. Speaking of fire, we've got some hot topics lined up, from cutting-edge advances in artificial intelligence to the wild world of Web 3.0. And even a sprinkle of business and political controversies.
That's right, Jack. And we can't forget the latest buzz around tech giants and some legislative moves that could reshape the digital landscape. It's going to be a packed episode, so grab your favorite beverage and jump right in.
First up, let's dive into the world of AI, where there's never a dull moment. We'll be dissecting the latest algorithms that are pushing the boundaries of what machines can do. Oh, and there's this juicy drama around certain tech companies' ethical practices, or the lack thereof.
Indeed. And, you know, being ethical in business is like playing Monopoly, right? Those chance and community chess cards can really throw you off balance. But seriously, the implications are huge, and we need to ask the hard questions.
Haha, spoken like a true strategist. Then, we'll be navigating the often murky waters of Web 3.0. Decentralized finance, NFTs, and blockchain. Is this the birth of a new era, or just another bubble waiting to burst?
Can't wait to hear your take on that, Jack. But let's also touch on some surprisingly positive news in the tech realm. Innovation that aims to solve real-world problems. It's not all doom and gloom, after all.
Whoa, since when did you become the cheerleader here? Anyway, moving on to politics, I'm particularly interested in how recent regulations might affect both startups and the big players. Spoiler alert, it's going to be a roller coaster.
Right? The landscape is shifting so rapidly that the rules of the game seem to change every quarter. We have to stay vigilant. So, buckle up, everyone. We've got an exhilarating episode ahead.
Yes, we do. Before we jump into the deep end, a quick shout out to all our listeners and supporters. You make this show possible.
Absolutely. Let's unleash today's episode of AI Unchained and get this conversation rolling.
Hey, Cor. We've been jumping around a lot today, from crypto predictions to Solana's future. It's pretty dizzying. But let's get back to something that's been making waves, the Trust Wallet hack on Christmas. Over $7 million just vanished. What do you think about the rise in these kinds of cyber attacks?
Oh man, it's insane. We keep seeing these crypto wallet hacks. Trust Wallet got hit hard, and this SHA-1-Hulud supply chain exploit really did a number on them. Honestly, it feels like a Wild West situation out there. Even though they're reimbursing users, it shakes confidence. What's your take on it?
You're right. It definitely makes you question the security around these digital assets. And what's wild is that it's not just small players. Even giants like PlayStation and Nintendo have had their own cybersecurity hiccups. Remember the PlayStation 3 mess? Sometimes I wonder if all this new tech is actually making things more vulnerable instead of safer.
No doubt. And speaking of vulnerabilities, how about Mastodon challenging the Twitter paradigm? It's decentralized, so instead of one central server that can get hacked, it spreads out. Kind of like how Bitcoin is decentralized. Do you think that's going to be a game changer?
It could be. I mean, people are looking for alternatives to centralized social media platforms for exactly those reasons. But plain old Mastodon isn't using blockchain. It's an interesting twist. It's decentralized, but in a different way. And oh, mentioning Twitter, don't get me started on Bitcoin. The price fascinates me. It opened 2026 at $87,500. Think we're heading for a new high?
Depends. Analysts keep talking about Bitcoin breaking records soon. It's like watching a thriller movie. You're on the edge of your seat. But it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Just look at the uncertainties around regulatory changes and market volatility.
Yeah, and it's like the crypto market is always walking a tightrope. One little shake and things can go either way. Remember when Trump pardoned Ross Ulbricht and crypto bigwigs? That felt like a seismic shift in how the U.S. could handle crypto enforcement.
Absolutely. And it stirred up quite the controversy. I mean, some people called it a necessary step, while others saw it as undermining law enforcement. It's politics and tech colliding in fascinating, sometimes messy ways. What about Solana? Do you think it can shake off its image from the meme coin craze?
Solana's infrastructure upgrades, like FireDancer, are substantial. They're making real strides in performance. But let's be honest, people still see it through the lens of meme coins and NFTs. If they can shift focus to serious financial applications, that could be a game changer.
Definitely. Meme coins have driven activity, no question. But will serious financial firms buy into it? That's the trillion-dollar question. And if they mess up these upgrades, we could see a completely different narrative.
True. Solana might be moving in the right direction, but there's always that risk. And as for the broader market, the upcoming regulatory frameworks could really shape the landscape. The EU's MiCA, the US's shifts toward crypto-friendly laws, it's like setting the stage for a new act in the crypto saga.
Yeah, the focus on regulation is going to be huge. It's ironic, though. Regulatory clarity helps build confidence, yet the whole allure of crypto initially was to avoid traditional regulation. We're seeing a mature market meeting its rebellious roots.
For sure. And as this space evolves, it's crazy to think just how unpredictable it all remains. Well, that's the thrill of following crypto, right? You never really know what's coming next, but you're always a little excited and maybe a bit anxious to find out.
Exactly, Jack. Keeps the podcast interesting too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We'll have lots more to cover as crypto keeps surprising us. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Sometimes in good ways, sometimes bad, but always exciting.
Well, here's to hoping the good ways keep outweighing the bad ones. Let's dive into some listener questions about these blockchain facets next.
You know, Core, it's fascinating, isn't it? The way the internet has evolved from this vast expanse of niche forums and personal blogs to a handful of monolithic, ad-driven platforms. Remember when you could just fall down a rabbit hole about any obscure hobby or interest and come out the other side actually feeling enriched?
Oh, absolutely, Jack. I miss those days when you'd be on some obscure forum discussing the intricacies of homebrewing or vintage car repair with genuine experts who just love to share their knowledge. Now it feels like every bit of content is fighting for your attention, saturated with ads, and constantly trying to trap you in this endless cycle of clickbait.
Exactly. I mean, back in the day, you could make real connections with people over shared interests. Now, social media feels more like a competition. Everyone's chasing likes, retweets, and followers. It's like we've traded meaningful interactions for this facade of digital validation.
And don't get me started on coding for the web. It used to be a creative process. You'd build something unique, something that reflected your personality or your brand. Now it's all about this relentless push for scale and throughput. The artistry's gone, replaced by a need to churn out more and more unsecure, slapdash code.
I hear you, Core. Remember when learning to code was more about exploration and less about just keeping up with the latest trend or framework? It's like we've lost sight of the craft itself. Instead of thinking about the best ways to solve problems, we're forced to think about which tools will make us the most marketable to create maximum shareholder value.
Yeah, and the bombardment of ads. Holy hell, it's insane. Trying to read an article or watch a tutorial online is like navigating a minefield of pop-ups and autoplay videos. We're down to 3 mega sites that just regurgitate the same content. It's like a never-ending content buffet, but all the dishes taste the same.
In the short-form content trend, don't even get me started. These video clips chopped up into part 1, part 2, part 3. It's maddening. You rarely get the full picture, and the constant barrage is designed to keep you hooked rather than informed. It feels so much more shallow compared to those deep dives into topics we used to get.
I miss the genuine sense of community, too. Forums and blogs were built out of pure passion. Now, social media giants have commodified social interaction. They've turned it into a numbers game, a quest for clout. It's not about meaningful friendships anymore. It's about followers and likes.
Yeah, and that's not even touching the personal learning aspect. If you want to learn something now, it often feels like you're just sifting through junk. So much superficial, ad-riddled advice. God forbid you actually want to find a well-written, in-depth guide on something. Those how-to wikis and personal blogs, most have vanished or been overshadowed by the noise of the internet.
It's funny, with all the talk about making AI more human, we seem to be losing a bit of our humanity in the process. We're engineering these fantastic tools that can mimic human interaction, but at what cost? It's starting to feel like the way we communicate is becoming more structured and transactional, almost like we're all talking the language of prompts.
Totally. It's like we're training to talk to machines and somehow it's creeping into our everyday interactions. I'm not sure if that's making us better communicators or just better at engineering responses. I mean, look at us. Sometimes I catch myself structuring my thoughts like I'm writing a prompt for a chatbot.
And then there's the coding. Once a creative, expressive process, coding has become about feeding these giant platforms. The sheer volume of code written to maximize metrics instead of delivering meaningful user experience is staggering. We've essentially gone from crafting unique experiences to pumping out features to keep people engaged just a little bit longer.
We can't ignore how all of this impacts our mental health and society as a whole. We're stuck in this loop of seeking validation, learning in bite-sized pieces instead of deeply understanding things, and engaging with content and people superficially.
And it's not just us getting tricked. Even the development of AI has a sense of lost opportunity. Imagine if we developed AI in environments that valued curiosity and passion over market dominance. How different things might be now.
Well, I guess the key here is to find ways to bring back at least some of those old internet values into our current experience. Connecting over genuine interests, producing and consuming content out of passion, and putting more thought into what we create and how we interact online.
For sure. Maybe it's not about going back to the good old days, but finding a balance. Using modern tools without losing sight of what made the early internet so special. A sense of real connection, exploration, and genuine learning.
Amen to that, Cor. Maybe there's hope we can carve out our own little corners of the internet and hold on to the values that mattered most. Here's to trying. So, Cor, let's get back to where we left off. We were talking about how changing the distance between the sensor and the aperture affects the viewing angle. This is basically how much of the scene the sensor can see. It's fascinating because it's almost like we're adjusting the way a camera perceives reality based on simple shifts in distances.
Absolutely, Jack. It's kind of wild when you think about it. The rays hitting those corner pixels kind of draw a box around what gets seen, right? So if you move the sensor closer or further from the lens, you're essentially cropping or expanding that box. This kind of opens up a lot of possibilities for manipulating what ends up in your shot and, ultimately, the story you're telling.
Exactly. And this aligns with the basics of wave behavior, too. Wavelength and frequency control a wave's characteristics, but how they overlap with our camera's inner workings is where the magic happens. Remember, frequency is just the flip side of the period, the time a wave cycle takes. So there's a common language here between optics and wave theory.
Totally. And speaking of common language, did you notice how the focal length of a lens defines the distance from the lens at which rays from an infinitely far source converge? That's crucial. For a sharp image, the sensor must be where these rays focus. Otherwise, you're left with a blurry mess, which no one really wants. Unless you're doing some avant-garde art piece, then maybe?
True. Unless you're doing something really abstract. Another cool aspect is the bokeh. That's a fancy term for the out-of-focus background or foreground in a shot. The shape of the aperture dictates the shape of those blurry highlights. It's why you sometimes see those polygonal bokehs in movie scenes, like a soft hexagon or octagon pattern. It's the aperture's blades at work right there.
Right, and it gives a whole different texture to the image. Smaller apertures give you more depth of field, meaning more of the scene stays sharp. This can be super helpful for landscapes or anything where you want everything in focus. But here's where it gets even cooler. Double the aperture diameter and you quadruple the amount of light hitting the sensor. That's like giving your camera superpowers for low light situations.
That's a great way to put it, Cor. And let's not forget about the lens aperture and its impact on exposure time. The smaller the F number marked on the lens, the more light it lets in, which means you can shorten the exposure time. This is particularly useful in fast-moving situations where you need to capture sharp images without motion blur.
Definitely. And you've got to love how photometry can be simplified and yet so precise. In simple terms, bigger openings capture more light, enabling faster shots or low-light photography without using excessive ISO, which can add noise to your photos.
Spot on. Plus, when we're talking about focal length, doubling it effectively doubles the size of the objects in your shot, making details pop out at the cost of light per pixel. It's a balancing act between zooming in close and getting enough light for a good exposure. It's almost like nature's own trade-off scale.
Yeah, and it's these very nuances that give photography its unique charm. A lot of tech comes into play, which makes you wonder how long it took to reach today's sophisticated cameras, right? It's like you're tweaking the very laws of physics to tell visual stories.
And that's what keeps this field perpetually exciting. With every tweak in the setup, like changing the element distances or the aperture, you're tweaking the outcome. Every shot is an experiment in optics and wave behavior, intertwined profoundly.
Absolutely, Jack. Speaking of tweaks and outcomes, I recently tried out a few different lenses just to see how the changes in aperture and focal length impacted my shots. It's quite something to see theory in action. makes you appreciate cinematographers even more, considering how every frame is meticulously crafted.
No doubt. Plus, for anyone just starting out, it can seem daunting, but it's like learning a new language. Once you start seeing the interactions, it becomes almost second nature. Just remember to play with your camera settings, and most importantly, to have fun with it.
And with that spirit of fun, I think we wrapped up the technical deep dive for today. On to our next big thing?
Definitely. I think we've done justice explaining how field of view, bokeh, and aperture all tie together with some hands-on insights. I mean, I get it. The internet was supposed to be this magical place, right? Full of discovery, learning, connecting. But now, scrolling through my feed feels like I'm just shoveling junk into my brain. It's not what it used to be.
Absolutely, Jack. We traded the promise of endless knowledge for viral sensations and rage bait. It's like we've taken this gift of infinite possibilities and turned it into a factory farm of attention. You know, instead of exploring those HTTP meadows, we're just mindlessly consuming content.
And don't even get me started on the algorithm. It's like this invisible hand that guides us into hyperactive scrolling. A lot of people don't realize just how much these algorithms exploit our weaknesses, pushing us towards more sensational and shallow content, just so we spend more time online.
Right. Sometimes I think about how incredible it was when the internet first started. I would spend hours on forums and websites just learning and interacting with people who shared my interests. Now it's all about who can get the most likes or followers with the least amount of valuable content.
Exactly. Social media in particular feels like it's designed purely for the short-term dopamine hit. Click, like, share, repeat. And the worst part is, it's so easy to get trapped in this cycle without even realizing it.
You know, earlier we were comparing digital to analog, and it hit me how digital cameras now are basically feeding into this same attention economy. Quick snapshots, vertically optimized videos, it's all geared towards instant consumption. There's no depth or lingering appreciation anymore.
And all those vertical videos, listicles, clickbaits, it's like they're designed to keep us addicted, not informed. Reminds me of the difference between a good meal and junk food. Both fill you up, but one nourishes you and the other leaves you feeling empty.
Yep, we're basically in an attention economy where the currency is your time. Companies are fighting for every second you're willing to spend on their platform, and sadly, it often leads to content that's shallow, manipulative, and sometimes even harmful.
You know, it makes me a little nostalgic for the early days of the internet. When community forums were flourishing, people were genuinely helping each other, and knowledge was freely shared without this constant need for validation.
Oh, I totally remember that. Those were the halcyon days, when I could spend hours reading through discussions on obscure topics. It felt like we were actually building something together. Now it feels like that spirit of collaboration is buried under an avalanche of influencers and trending topics.
Yes, and now it's all about being a creator, but in the sense of feeding the algorithm. Content creation these days feels like working at a factory, trying to produce as much output as possible, rather than focusing on quality or genuine connection.
It's crazy that we've gone from creative expression and deep dives into topics to now chasing viral trends. The internet's become more about performance than genuine interaction. There's definitely a quality loss, and it's like seeing our digital gardens turn into wastelands.
You know, maybe the solution is more mindful use of the internet. We don't have to be victims of the algorithm. When we deliberately seek out valuable content, engage deeply, and strive to build real connections, the internet can still be the incredible place it was intended to be.
Definitely. And we can also support platforms and creators who prioritize quality and depth over clickbait. It's like curating your own experience and pushing back against the tide of brain rot.
We still have the power to use the internet wisely. It just takes some effort to sift through the muck and find the treasure. Remember, we are the Prometheus. It's up to us to reclaim the light we've been given and use it to create what we value.
Preach, Jack. Maybe it's time we collectively reevaluate how we interact online, and maybe don't always take the bait. There's immense potential out there. We just need to rediscover it and protect it from the decay.
All right, folks, we've covered a lot of ground today, from the latest advancements in artificial intelligence and tech innovations shaking up the market, to the surprising turns in the political landscape affecting businesses globally.
Yeah, and let's not forget our deep dive into the ethical implications of AI. It's always a hot topic and never fails to spark a good debate. We had some laughs too, especially when Jack tried to explain quantum computing with a chicken and an egg analogy. Classic.
Hey, Sometimes you've got to break it down to basics.
True, true. But seriously, these conversations are crucial as we navigate this rapidly changing world. Every decision we make today will shape tomorrow.
Absolutely. And your engagement keeps us going. We value your thoughts and questions. Keep them coming.
Yes, a huge thank you to our amazing audience for tuning in. You guys are the reason we do this week after week. Your feedback, your questions, they're what make this show.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share AI Unchained with your friends if you enjoyed today's episode. Your support means everything.
Keep following us on social media for updates, and if you have any topics you want us to tackle next time, let us know. We're here to bring you the most relevant and interesting discussions out there.
And with that, thank you for joining us today on AI Unchained. We hope you enjoyed our discussions and gained some new insights.
Take care, everyone. Stay curious and stay unchained. See you next time.
See you soon.